I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, bright sunshiny day. It's gonna be a bright, bright sunshiny day. Yes, I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of my bad feelings have disappeared.
That was known as Brent Terry and Co. Very good. Thank you so much. This morning's program, titled Creators Celebrating Creation, will be presented by members of this congregation. And we're so happy. This was created by Dolly Berthelot, including Margaret McLaren, Charlotte Crane, and Pam Levitt, all members of this congregation who are more than willing to share their talent and imagination. Thank you.
Sunrise, sunset, swiftly fly the years. At the advanced age of 88 years, it's not the years that fly by, it's the days. Do I make the most of my remaining days? Well, here is one day in the life of a nature lover. You can decide. I arise at dawn and go out on my east-facing front deck to get the newspaper. I don't think I have ever seen a more beautiful sunrise. The colors are breathtaking. Pastel mauves and streaks of pink and lilac, lines of blue sky peeking through, all the colors changing as the day advances. I have been enjoying this early morning ritual for 15 years of retirement. The day progresses. Coffee is sipped and newspaper is read. Time for the next phase, one of my favorite times, my early morning nature walk. I'm reminded of one of my favorite hymns, In the Garden. I fill the bird feeders and bird baths, check the butterfly weeds and deal for monarch eggs or baby caterpillars, and deadhead the snapdragons. I find a blue jay feather and save it for Sam, my great-grandson feather collector. I pass by the morning glory trellis where the beautiful little blossoms are just unfurling to greet the day. Pink and red and white, sky blue and dark blue, I marvel at how a $2 pack of seeds can brighten up my mornings. The birds have now flocked to the feeders. Blue jays, cardinals, chickadees, titmice, brown thrashers, mockingbirds, doves, and woodpeckers are having breakfast, singing all the while. I get my second cup of coffee and sit on the back deck for a while. Mundane household task, a scroll through of Facebook and emails, and an old lady's midday nap. Then fast forward to the late evening ritual. Time for me to feed the foxes while I watch the sunset. I go to the fox feeding fence behind my house, and there, waiting shyly for me, are three little pointy faces. I have been feeding the foxes for 15 years, generation after generation. I love them. They are my friends. I feel so honored that they trust me. As the foxes are eating, the sun is setting. What a glorious sight. No pastels here. The western sky is ablaze with deep oranges, reds, and golds. It takes a long while for these bold colors to fade into dusk. The foxes have finished their dinner and have slipped away to their den in the ravine. I make my way back to my yard just in time to watch the moonflowers quivering and unfurling. The street light shining on the towering magnolia tree lights up the shiny leaves, making it look like the world's biggest Christmas tree. The stars are coming out, and a cantaloupe-sliced moon is hanging in the darkening sky. A grand finale to what some might call a do-nothing day. I call it another day lived, and I am grateful for it. Will I see tomorrow's sunrise, sunset? I don't know. It's not my call. If I enjoy more sunrises and sunsets, it will be a blessing. If not, who knows? Perhaps I'll just be seeing them from a different vantage point.
Imagination and observation come together when we look beyond our bootsteps and our senses to ponder what is truly wonderful and bountiful, and that is nature. Nature is ours to worship for its beauty, to admire the fortitude and diversity of God's creatures, while also dreading nature's destructive capabilities and longing to become a part of the miracles. Here is a poem about the power of nature. It is called Ever, and it is a message from Hurricane Ivan. Gnarled, storm-stripped branches stretch toward the sky, stark and naked, aching, unwilling to know despair. Blue sky aloft coquettishly beckons, an alluring temptress, rousing one last hope for a goal barely achievable now, if ever it was. Wind whispers its secret. Neither twisted limbs nor dazzling blue heavens yield to the disbanded truth, the ravaged skeletal remains of a once vibrant life. Gray clouds intervene, swooping close to the once graceful stubble. Vines climb relentlessly, shrouding the nudity of the anguished stalks.
Raindrops, a gust of storm, a windy burst blow across the vulnerable treetops. Dark clouds cover, shut out the sun, turn blue to slate, make the impossible unknowable, unforeseeable. What once seemed certain, azure template, the heavens, infinity, is no more. Still, the twisted, crippled skeleton reaches out, grasping, desperate for one unredeemable chance, and it will come back. And here is a happier poem, revealing everyone's desire to soar with the wind and become one with the heavens. Flying. I fly a few footfalls above the dusty road, speeding along with the wind in my hair. I ride above every tree and abode, undaunted, knowing I can go anywhere. I hop out the window of my house at night from the second floor as the clouds drift by. I sail along toward stars sparkling bright and salute the moon as I climb on high. I always knew that I could fly. I never did think to ask myself why. I accepted the sky as my special right, a world of my own, reached only through flight.
We're now going to do the doxology. I didn't know I was leading this, but the doxology is written in your order of service. Very simple, short song.
Part of the awe that we feel when we are in nature is not only marvel at its beauty, but also the sense of something bigger, the continuity and longevity of nature that surpasses our small existence. It can allow for perspective and soothe the ego. This feeling has inspired me when I try to work through pain, grief, loss, and change in my writing. I often use metaphors involving shells, water, rocks, space, and storms in my work, and I'm gratified to share two such pieces with you today. The first is called Predecessor. A worry stone is already rubbed smooth before it is seized and overstroked. It has tumbled over years, crashed through many waves, and lashed against a gravel floor until all the harsh edges are eroded. Perhaps that is why it soothes us, gives us solidity, some proof of endurance in our pockets. And the second one is actually, it was actually inspired and written on the day that Hurricane Irma hit. It's called Hurricane. The winds are blowing and these walls are coming down. Pinned down and helpless to control, I wait inside these fragile walls, surrendered to the flow. I watch the splitting open and the rising tides grow, and I lift my head to the skies. There's nowhere for me to go. The winds are blowing and these walls are coming down. I remember the strange hush, a time before the storm, when silence seemed too much. And I felt its foreboding because quiet never lasts. It is waiting to be broken. It's a moment that has passed. The winds are blowing and these walls are coming down. The roof rips off my shelter. I'm pelted by the rain. All the structure folds around me. I am blinded and in pain. I lay there with only the sky above and my heart filled with all that I have lived, with all that I have loved. The winds are blowing and these walls are coming down. Everything changes. Storms shift into day and clarity. Whether I go or stay makes no difference, except in what I have yet to say, that the places we rebuild are stronger from the fray. The winds have blown and my walls came down. The places we rebuild inside are stronger from the fray. Thank you.
Seeing our time, I'm going to skip the first poem that I was going to do because I'll be doing a lot else after this, except to say that it's about my recent obsession with clouds, and the rest of the service is going to reflect that obsession in various ways. The poem I will read is about a particular cloud and how it struck me. And the name of that is Pterodactyl Cloud. Gargantuan pterodactyl cloud emerges from behind the high rise, dwarfing all else. Beaked face, white against the blue sky, giant wings outstretched, bruised gray underbelly, stormy, gurgling. Not really a dinosaur, experts say. But I first met it as such when my then young son fed his dino passion. Pterodactyl perhaps is bird-related, a curator then explained, and I was hooked. I live in the cracks, the borders, the not fully understood, the thin, fluid line between this and that, overlapping realities. Mysteries. I like it here. Head in the clouds? Perhaps. The vaporous pterosaur moves forward, past drifting into present, as past is wont to do. Within moments, he dissipates, extinct again, for now. Suddenly, a blue angel jet roars into view, piercing the void. Transmutation? Our seventh principle is respect for the interdependent web of all creation. Respect, it says. I noticed when I was preparing this that I was saying appreciation, and I checked and it was like, oh, it's really respect. I believe that going beyond respect to appreciation is important. And I believe that in order to be appreciative of nature, we have to first attend to nature. I was pleased that this month's theme overall is attention. I think we benefit from attending to nature and appreciating nature. As I said, for me, that has taken the form of clouds in recent years and increasingly in the last couple of years. I would even go beyond respect, appreciation, attention to love nature, and in my case now, to be completely obsessed and love the clouds. So this service encourages us to pay attention to nature, to appreciate the beauties and oddities with which we're all blessed. I'll say that I lived for 40 years in an old house shrouded under very big mossy oaks that some of you know. And as much as I love those, I did not see the sky. Most of the time from that home, I did not see the sky, and I started being bothered increasingly by that. And that absence helped me to be thrilled to move into a high-rise condominium with an open view of the water, with an open view of the sky. And it fed the obsession that had really started prior to that. And so you'll see that both in the slideshow you're going to see and in the weird little story I'm going to share with you. Like the artist Monet, whom I never used to understand when I read that he had spent so much of his life simply painting the pond in his backyard. I thought, how could somebody do that? I have become that kind of person. I really have, because it's always different, and I appreciate the variation and the beauty that literally comes to me. So at least 75% of the slideshow you're going to see is actually taken from my balcony on that fourth floor. Not all, there's some others, but you'll notice a lot of the foreground is the same. The story I'm going to read to you, I'm probably not skilled enough to illustrate it, so I'm searching for either the right watercolor artist or master digital artist who can transform some of my clouds into images that illustrate the story I'll read to you. So I welcome suggestions if anybody has any afterwards. I suppose the story I'm about to read would be considered primarily a children's story, though I hope you may find that it has value for every age, as do many children's stories. It's simple, and it has virtually no plot. So don't expect the two cherubs that are the stars of the show to fall out of the sky or anything. It's not going to happen. So now, I invite you to just sit back and relax. Try to become a child with a child's sense of both playfulness and awe. And I hope you simply enjoy the multimedia experience. Cherubs playing in the clouds. Angelic cherubs may get tired of merely lollygagging around in the clouds, so they get playful, sometimes even mischievous. That's when heavenly pillow fights break out, and oh boy, the skies then get even more interesting than usual. One cherub, let's call him Charlie, notices a large, plump pillow of a cloud between himself and another cherub. Let's call her Connie. Actually, Connie was eyeing the cloud pillow as well, but Charlie didn't realize that. Suddenly, they both jump over to grab that prize. Connie is a second quicker. She snatches it fast and slams it over Charlie's head. "Ow!" he yells, though it really didn't hurt. I mean, it was a cloud. And then he grabs it away. Connie flaps her little wings to dart to safety before Charlie can wallop her. She's quite a dancer, so her evasive maneuvers keep Charlie spinning around and slapping that pillow everywhere except on her. Even hitting soft clouds, Charlie's plops, bops, and flops make nearby blackbirds fly madly around. For only an instant, those hysterical birds distract Charlie, so Connie grabs one end of the pillow. Charlie holds tight. Connie holds tight. They pull back and forth, back and forth. With each yank, they strain, grunt, squat up and down, as if on a seesaw. Then they both grin. What fun. Soon the pillow cloud can take no more. It starts sloughing off a few fluffs and transforms in their hands, stretches to long brush strokes. You've seen clouds like that, and breaks apart. Both cherubs fall on their tushes and giggle up a storm. Really, they literally giggle up a storm. Winds from their laughter make scattered clouds gather and darken, sprinkle and then pour water below. It's a gusher. Connie and Charlie scamper and fly over to drier clouds and start getting creative. They know clouds can become anything. Sometimes the cherubs simply notice what is hidden in the clouds, and sometimes they help the process along. One will spot an animal forming, maybe suggesting a four-legged mammal of some kind, and he or she will pat, poof, and smooth that cloud into a dog, or a cat, or a rabbit, or an elephant if the cloud is especially large. The other might see our cloud sculpt reptiles, a snake, an alligator, various dinosaurs. Together they build zooming race cars and chugging steam engines and sailing vessels, ships floating over the bays instead of in them. Occasionally, as they pull the cloud apart, The cherubs realize the small round tufts can become balls, sort of, for soft snowball fights and dodgeball or simply roll and pitch games. Far below the cherubs, some people, especially children, and some child-wise adults, often look up and watch all this. They probably don't see the cherubs. Cherubs are usually invisible to human beings. But people do see the results. All around the world, children and teenagers and some child-wise adults admire the sky and the life they find in clouds. Some areas rarely have clouds. Others, like ours, rarely don't have clouds. And some places and times have more spectacular clouds than others. But there's a chance to see Charlie and Connie's masterpieces if you merely look up. During some glorious sunrises and sunsets, you may glimpse moments when the usually vanilla and occasionally chocolate clouds turn to sherbet. Rich strawberry pinks, oranges, blueberries, and deep grape. So many people do look. They look up from houses, apartments, and backyards, from community centers and condos, and from parks and buses and bicycles and beaches and hilltops. Some who are homeless even look up from the cardboard boxes or garbage bag tents that shelter them. These folks don't have much, but they too have the sky, including those magically ever-changing clouds. Children and teens and child-wise adults look up from the beaches and cliffs and surfaces of the huge Atlantic and Pacific Ocean, or the smaller Indian, Southern, and Shivery Arctic Oceans, and all the shores around all the seas and all the waterways, and all the towns and all the cities and rivers and creeks and forests and plains of all the world's seven continents. They glance up from the savannas of Africa, the forests of Bavaria and California, from the green slopes and valleys of the lush Smokies of Tennessee and other Appalachian mountains, and from the more rugged, towering Rockies and snow-covered Alps and Andes and Himalayas. They look up from Buddhist temples in Tibet and Thailand and China, Hindu shrines in India, mosques in Iraq and Iran, Catholic cathedrals and Protestant churches and Jewish synagogues all over Europe and the United States. Unitarians, Taoists, mystics, humanists, atheists, agnostics, and people with no labels at all look up. Children and grown-ups who have never heard of such labels look up. What matters is looking up, really looking. The whole world shares the sky and all its wonders. Marvelously entertaining clouds perform totally free for everyone who pays attention. Imaginative lookers may see horses galloping across the sky, a jazzy sax player bending backwards as he blows, a cheerleader twirling a fiery baton, ballerinas leaping, a quarterback racing toward a touchdown. Some people spot giant butterflies and pterodactyls and stormy gray eagles carrying fish. Others glimpse fantastic creatures that never existed before that moment in that cloud. So quickly, such images can disappear. Gone forever, except in imagination and memory. Depending on where they happen to be, around Christmas time, some children may be more likely to spot Santa Claus and elves, or St. Nicholas in a long robe. Those at Disney may see Mickey or Donald. Some in Turkey may wave excitedly at Karakuz, Turkey's popular folk character. As one of my favorite Chinese maxims says, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. Whoever and wherever we are, however we live, whatever we believe or don't believe, human beings of every background, age, and description at one time or another delight in finding images in the clouds, and most feel grateful. They look up and are uplifted, their imagination stimulated, their spirits nourished. One family notices a clucking cloud chicken riding an unusually portly and, of course, spotless giraffe. They all point up and chatter and laugh together. That's worth a lot. Meanwhile, Charlie and Connie are jumping up and down on their clouds as if on a trampoline, bouncing, tumbling, leaping up in air splits, just enjoying life. Yet they keep an eye on the earth below. They watch multitudes admire, imagine, appreciate, savor. Could any artist ask for more? The cherubs smile, giggle, slap hands in a lively high five. Then they return to more ethereal play, more spontaneous creating, more freewheeling flights of fancy, more fun. Go outside after service. Look up. What do you see? No interesting clouds today? Sometimes and places do have more beautiful and fascinating clouds than others, depending on climate and weather, and whether cherubs are active that day. Don't worry. There'll be another day, another moment, another spot of magic in the sky. Keep looking, my friends. Keep looking. Thank you. Thank you. And let's have another round of applause for the other creators and readers. Finally, our closing words, which are up there so that you can join, so that we can all join in reading those. May a renewed attention to nature's beauty stimulate your imagination, soothe your soul, sustain you in pain or grief, and continually nourish your spirit. Enjoy.